Since March 2009, the Pharmacy Podcast has been developing content monthly, weekly, and daily for the business of pharmacy. With more than 25 different podcast channels, more than 1 million downloads, and 30-plus participating pharmacists, the Pharmacy Podcast Network is the global leader in podcasting for the pharmacy professional. Find all of our podcast channels by going to pharmacypodcast.com/shows.
Podcast. Evidence-based medicine integrates clinical experience and a patient-centered focus with the best available research information. It's a movement which aims to increase the use of high-quality clinical research in clinical decision-making. The evidence-based approach requires new skills of the clinician, including efficient literature research and the application of formal rules of evidence in evaluating clinical literature. This podcast is dedicated to all healthcare providers with a thirst for scientific knowledge. Those who are explorers, innovators, and researchers. Welcome to the Evidence-Based Podcast with your host, Dr. Jason Cavallina.
Good morning, Pharmacy Podcast Nation. This is Dr. J-Max with Todd Urey. Going to be talking coronavirus 2 today. Going to do our second episode on the coronavirus, Todd. What do you think?
So I am really looking forward to this conversation with you. John Hopkins University started gathering research back in December when it was first discovered that there was something happening with the so-called coronavirus, and they've built some data that's now become an interactive map, which we're going to include in the show notes. It kind of gives you a trackable by country where the virus, the coronavirus, has been documented via cases. And based on this data from John Hopkins University, there's 81,397 cases to date. And they started tracking this information after compiling and then looking back and verifying the information as of January 22nd. So January 22nd to February 26th is the compiling of this data. I find that really interesting, Jason, because what I'm seeing is two things. Number one, better information than what we had the last time that you and I talked about the coronavirus. Absolutely. And then number two, hyperbole. And I want everybody to realize the news organizations today, and I've seen things change in my lifetime where I remember news being stale and boring and just a report of what was happening, right?
That's right. That's
today, right. And then back in my day, we had the boring news, and then we had editorials, or we had magazine-like shows that they could embellish other stories. Well, now the blending of true, bona fide, hardened news versus making it sizzle and steam so that they can sell more advertising is becoming blended. And I really feel threatened as a citizen, literally, of where do I get my news at? Where do we get information about the latest and greatest on what's happening in our world from a political perspective, scientific perspective? And then more importantly, when something like this happens, coronavirus, which is being talked about by every news source out there, and they want to capitalize on that, but then we have to kind of move through the weeds in order to come out with what is known as evidence base or fact. So what have you found, Jason, to bring us up to date?
Well, there's a couple of things that I wanted to touch on that you were talking about just a second ago. It's really important to understand that the news of the world, right, used to be facts. And you couldn't say anything unless it was a real fact. In the early 1900s, you had sensational newspapers that, you know, sinking of the Maine and all those other things that started the Spanish-American War. But there's newspapers were always trying to sell something. Then it became television news, and it was Walter Cronkite, facts, facts, facts. And then if a guy wanted to give an editorial, the news director would get on and say, this is an editorial, these are my opinions, and it's not the opinions of the station or whoever owns us,
right.
But this is what I think. And it was, I think this because fact one, fact two, fact three, here's my opinion about those facts, and here's why I think you should or should not do something.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just, in my opinion, Joe, I believe that blah, blah, blah. You know, it's uneducated, unread individuals about specific topics that want to tell you they are the source of everything. And it used to be a synthesization of the facts to make it so that people understood. Now it's left to the individual to go to find the true truth-telling things. And I think the thing we're trying to do more than anything else is give you factual information without opinion. And I think I hope I do a good job of saying, guys, this is my opinion. I think with the information I have formulated this idea from what I've read. I didn't come up with it on my own. I didn't dream it up in a dream last night. This is what I know to be true from the reputable sources, and here's what I think about that. And then that's going to be filtered through my experience, my clinical expertise, and the world at large. Does that sound fair?
It does. And as scientists, I'm not a scientist, but I'm speaking for you as a scientist because I every day read about what pharmacists are discovering, talking about, researching. I'm your biggest fan. That's what I do. So Gilead, for example, Gilead had a surge in their stock price back on February 25th because there was a discovery based on this medication called Remdesivir. I think I'm saying it said Remdesivir. And this was showing signs of efficacy against the deadly COVID, COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak. And it was exciting for me to read something that was based on research that was being done, not by Gilead, but by a third party, and then showed, in fact, how it may be used against this virus in some way or in combination with Tamiflu or something.
Yeah, and same thing with ritonavir, lopinavir in combination with Tamiflu.
Right.
Might be effective, right? Might be.
Yes. So, and I want us to mix things up. And when the listener, when you're listening, we're not saying things as the bona fide end-all be-all. You're the scientist. You're the pharmacist. Collect multiple sources of information, and then when your patient, when your customer comes to the counter or calls you or talks with you, it's up to your decision. It is your decision. It's your license. It's your career. It's your reputation to give them the best information that you know based on the information that you've collected from sources that you trust. We were making comments before the recording, Jason, that you can't just watch Fox News, for example, all by itself as a standalone source of all be all information, and that's it.
Correct.
You have to go to the CDC's website. Maybe you watch Fox as a kickoff. Maybe you go to Pharmacy Times. Maybe you go to the Washington Post. Maybe you go to a medical journal that you access on, you know, online or a subscription. Regardless, by mixing it up, you're going to, because of all the schooling and professionalism and cases, and if you've been in pharmacy for 5, 10, 20, 30 years, you are going to be able to make a intelligent decision based on what you've come up with, based on the facts, and based on the information that you trust.
Correct. And the other thing is really important to think about is you have to remember to think critically. No matter what it is, no matter what subject we're talking about, the concept of critical thinking seems to go away because of passion, because of bias, because of fear, because of stigma. Common or critical thinking, common sense, you know, is very hard to come by and is very uncommon. But the concept of critical thinking, what does it mean? Where did I get the information? Who's giving me this information? And what do I do with it? Don't believe the first thing you read. Don't believe everything you read and half of what you see, sort of things. So, you know, so in summary, I just wanted to hit a quick summary of where we are today in the coronavirus. We're seeing about 81,000 cases, maybe pushing 82,000 cases around the world. And you have to understand the other thing too is COVID-19 is the disease that you present with, and the virus is named SARS coronavirus 2. So this is a completely new disease. So people are saying, why don't we know anything? Okay, how come the information keeps changing? How come it's an incubation of 2 to 14 days? How come we don't know? Well, because it's a brand new disease. The concept here is that this is an outbreak of a respiratory disease that is new. And it was first detected, we want to remind you that it was in Wuhan City in Hubei Province in China. It's now detected in 37 locations internationally, including the United States. The virus that causes disease is called SARS coronavirus 2, and the disease that it causes is named coronavirus disease 2019 or COVID-19.
And Jason, I just want to make a quick comment based on the cases, almost to that 82,000 level. There are 42 cases being reported in the United States in a centralized area. And I'm not sure of the exact, it almost looks like it's in the center of the United States. It's coming. I don't think that we can prevent it from getting here. I don't know what to think, but it's not even as dangerous as the influenza season has been for 2019-2020. I think it's time for medical and healthcare professionals to be to allow their patients to understand what they can do to prevent it. And the number one thing that you said last time is to wash your hands. So
exactly.
And that's been the way of preventing sickness for as long as I can remember.
Absolutely. Let's just go over quick, simple terminology, right? And this is important to understand when you're watching the news and you're hearing what they're saying about the disease and they're describing outbreaks, pandemics, epidemics. What is it? What does it mean? Simply remember that an outbreak is just a sudden rise in the number of cases of the disease. You could say that when flu season hits, we have an outbreak of flu. What's an epidemic? An epidemic is an outbreak of that disease that attacks many, many people at the same time and may spread through one or more than one community. So this means that a disease has become a community disease, and that's important to understand, the community aspect, meaning that if I'm walking around, I can get it from you, I can give it to you, I can give it to a group of people I'm with. If I'm on a plane with a bunch of people, I could get a portion of that population sick. Okay, then a disease can go from epidemic to pandemic. Pandemic, it means that an epidemic status disease, a community disease, spreads around the world. Now, are we at epidemic standpoint? Yeah, we definitely are an epidemic. Is it a pandemic yet? You know, I would say I don't think we're there yet. Could it be something that it becomes a pandemic? Definitely. Now, there's some concepts that you'll hear, like the president said it's going to go away in 2 or 3 weeks. That's been information that he got and was briefed by the CDC, because there's a belief, like other coronaviruses, and it's also considered to be like the flu, that when the temperatures get warmer, these diseases wane in the northern hemisphere. So it's a possibility that this coronavirus will act like SARS and MERS and will go down in its status as the temperatures get warmer and there's less people trapped inside and we're moving around a little bit more. We don't know. We can't say that that's actually going to be true. Is it something that happened with SARS? Yes. Could it actually come back next year if it does go away? Yeah, it's a possibility. It's now a new virus that's living within certain communities. Is it in every community? Not necessarily. That's why I'm hedging the concept of pandemic. Does it have the possibility? Absolutely. Is it the 1918 flu? Not right now. Remember, that killed 50 million people.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we need to really be concerned about, like we said just a second ago, that the same disease prevention steps we use for cold and flu are exactly the same disease prevention tools we need for coronavirus.
So talking about the Diamond Princess as the cruise ship that we mentioned, some of those patients are in Omaha. The tourism industry is an interest. This is not a place of information I thought would be relevant. But the reason why they're chiming in is because they're the first to be impacted. And they've seen a decline in cancellations of booked trips already. And it's been significant enough for them to report this to the CDC. And it's interesting to see there's a chief executive of tourism in Ireland who said, you know, what they expected in the basis of what they normally do every year, it's down by over 70%. So that kind of gives you a preface that people are taking this seriously, which is good, but to be panicky or to be, to not send your kids to school or anything like that at this point, it's premature for the United States. However, tourism to China, tourism to Israel, anytime that there's, you know, a plane internationally, I think they're taking it very seriously, and it's for good reason.
Yeah. The other thing too is think about numbers of cases versus deaths. Cold and flu has a death rate of somewhere around 0.04%, if I got my numbers correct. You guys can check me on that and write me a note if I'm way off on that. But the coronavirus is showing about a 3% death rate. So, you know, people are scared because it's killing people a little bit more than cold and flu. But if you're looking at where those deaths are happening, right, it's in Weibei province. It's getting out, but not as many people are dying per area. Like if you look at other parts of mainland China, in Beijing, Shanghai, Fujian, there are hundreds, 200 to 400 people who are sick. 2, 3, 4, 6 have died. And this is, you know, they're breaking up the different areas in mainland China where they are sick and maybe dying. There's 42 people on the Diamond Princess who were sick. None of them have died. Thailand has got about 40 illnesses. No one has died. Hong Kong has 91 illnesses. Only 2 people have died. Right. So it's a disease. It's definitely causing problems. But again, with proper things in place, we're not going to have the problems that we think we're going to have, or people are inflaming the situation about. Does that kind of make sense?
It does, and it makes me realize that it's really going, the public's safety is through education, and it's some of the most simple of things, and it's going to come down to communications with physicians, nurses, and pharmacists to communicate this to the questioning and worrying public, which once again, like we started out, the fire will be stoked and will be blown up by the news media as much as possible, because they absolutely love the ratings and the attention that everybody's glued to their televisions or their Twitter or whatever, wherever you're getting your news. Italy has confirmed 400 cases, which is actually news as of February 26th. And it is considered something much more serious today than when we first recorded and talked about this. And it's funny to also read commentary on it, and you can almost read and know what is hearsay and what is fact. And that's why I like when I talked to you about the second episode, you said, I'll go to the CDC's website and I'll collect the latest information. And, you know, if you're listening and you're not a healthcare professional, you're a consumer, someone that wants information, you have access to these things too. You don't have to read a news source without double checking it through the World Health Organization or the CDC.
It's absolutely correct. And the other thing to grab as important for a risk assessment, the CDC is saying that for the general American public, who are unlikely to be exposed to the virus at this time, the immediate health risk from COVID-19 is considered low. Under current circumstances, certain people will have an increased risk of infection. For example, healthcare workers who are caring for patients who are exposed to COVID-19, have COVID-19, and other close contacts. So there are specific guidelines set aside for those individuals. Not going to get into those. It's not for us to deal with in this area, because it's only going to inflame the situation. Granted, what other things do people want to do? Everybody wants to go buy masks, right, Tom?
Yeah.
Call the pharmacy. There are no face masks available. Well, good. Don't waste your money. Because if you are of generally good health and you do not have any illness of any kind, right? You don't have the cold, you don't have a flu, you don't have coronavirus, wearing a mask is not going to help you. Okay? It's not going to prevent you from getting sick. If you are already sick, wear a mask. It will prevent you from getting other people sick.
Yeah,
it will
sense.
Reduce the risk. Okay? It's not going to be 100% effective, but it will help you. And then the CDC put out a very funny infographic about what types of facial hair you can have if you are going to be working in endemic areas and you're going to be working with sick patients. It's basically the same guidelines that they would have had for if you were working in a biological control room, right? You have to have a mask that can seal around your face. Well, if you have bushy facial hair, the mask isn't going to seal. So that's kind of why they put those information things out there. People are laughing and saying everybody's got to shave their face because you're going to get sick if you've got a beard. You're not going to get sick if you have a beard, okay? Having a beard doesn't get you sick, doesn't make for disease ridden in your face. As much as people wash their face and shower, and you're just as clean as everybody else. So don't freak out if you've got a beard. Okay, that's really designed for people who are going to be working in containment areas, working with sick people in hospital settings, who have to wear a specific biological preventative mask system that will have to seal to their face. Well, it can't seal if you've got a bushy beard. Simple as that, guys.
Makes sense. Well, I appreciate this update. They say that... As a side note, Pope Francis is suffering from a cold after having a big public event. There's a PayPal warning of the coronavirus is going to have a negative impact on revenue. There are reports of, stock losses because of being tied back to the coronavirus. So it's going to have an impact, I think, on a multitude of things, but I think we need to all be information-based and data-based and fact-based by checking where that information's coming from and not be, filled with panic and thinking that the sky is falling.
Right. It's a serious situation. Treat it with sobriety. Treat it with the critical thinking that you have developed throughout your careers, and give honest answers to patients who are asking questions. If you don't know, say, I don't know, I'll get you that answer, right? And you'll see them soon. I hope we've answered a fair amount of your questions in this. If we haven't, please send a note in the comment section. Let us know if we'll go over some things that we may have missed, and we're happy to do another show on it. We're going to be collaborating with other content providers within the platform and outside the platform.
Yep.
And we just want to give you as much real life information as possible.
The aspect of all this that worries me more so than the virus itself is the effect that it's having on ingredients that about 90% of our generics are made up of, which makes me think of the interview I did with Catherine Eban, who was the author of A Bottle of Lies, talking about how the generic manufacturers have to come up with a new auditing system based on the compiling of their generic medications to ensure that the potency of the medication ingredients is what they say it is, as well as that it's not that from a percentage perspective, it's not weak from one batch versus the next batch of information. Of ingredients. And I thought that was a really interesting book that she wrote. I'm about halfway through it, but that drug shortage component of all of this, that's the impact on the healthcare system that would bring worry to me more so than the actual virus itself.
That's true. It really is true. It's something that I think that in terms of political talk or whatever it is, the U.S. government needs to rethink the situation of where we're allowing our vital medications to be made. If you need to be a self-sufficient country, certain things need to be made within that country that will not be impacted by world-level problems. And then having that within our own borders allows us to go outside of ourselves and give those products to countries who need it. We have certain standards that we live by when we are create a product under FDA guidelines. It's a lot easier for an FDA inspector to inspect a plant within the United States than it is to inspect a plant in China, India, or other countries.
Right.
You're not always up to speed on what's going on and if they're always following the same procedures. Because now you got to send a guy around the world. And it's that their numbers are limited, just like pharmacy inspectors are, right? There's not a ton of guys from the state board running around checking every pharmacy. There's not a ton of FDA inspectors going around to make sure that every facility out there is 100% following the guidelines of the FDA. But when they're not, they're taken offline. And those medicines are banned from being dispersed in the United States. So there are very good checks and balances of all the facilities that are out there, but it just has to remain vigilant, right? What was the Reagan's quote? Trust but verify, right? It's important to always be verifying what's going out there. And as pharmacists, that's what we do, right? We have to trust the people we're working with, but our job is to verify what's going on. So when you get information in, you take that information in, run it through our clinical filter in our brain, and then understand whether or not we can purvey that information out there.
Jason, I appreciate you being on this and updating us. If anyone has any comments, please reach out to Jason and I on all social media platforms. You can find us at Pharmacy Podcast. And I know, Jason, we can reach you at Dr. JMax.
On Twitter, at Dr. JMax, on Instagram.
Yep.
I'm all over LinkedIn. You can probably find me on Facebook too.
Yeah, reach out and give us. Also, there's a new feature on the Pharmacy Podcast site. Go to Pharmacy Podcast and go to the blog section. We are taking blogs now, Jason, from guests, guest writers. We had Nabila.
Oh,
Ishmael.
She's such a good writer.
Dr. Ishmael is amazing, and she did a blog for us, and we posted that there on the changing role of pharmacists. We also featured a blog on medication adherence with one of our major sponsors, RxSafe, talking about the importance of MedSync. So, and on that page, which is pharmacypodcast.com/blog, there is a recording feature now that you can chime in and give us up to 2 minutes of your ideas around a subject. It can be something that we've already podcasted about, or it could be something that you'd like to talk about, and we will feature your input in a future podcast. So let's get involved in this publication. Jason, I've always meant this to be a much wider standing platform than just you and I talking to each other or the rest of our 45 hosts. We want to hear from other pharmacists, so take advantage of that.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.